welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the program here on this Tuesday. And what a program it will be for you today. You picked a great podcast to listen to if this is your first time, because we have a first-time guest that I am convinced you will absolutely be amazed with. Dr. Mike Adams from the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, professor of criminology. And I tell you, you may have seen him in the papers on occasion, embroiled in the midst of a controversy. Not really something bad, just something the people on the left and liberals and those in the media might not have liked and appreciated. And so listen to this podcast very carefully, because he's a smart guy and he can tell you probably better than anyone else right now what's going on college campuses, university campuses all across our country in the efforts to indoctrinate students when it comes to speech and free speech and hate speech and trigger speech and microaggression speech and all of that stuff. Dr. Adams is spot on in understanding and being able to articulate what's going on. In fact, he's going to be the kickoff speaker for the ICON Lecture Series, March 7th, and the title of his speech will be How U.S. Campuses Incubate and Enforce Cultural Marxism. Now, if that doesn't let you know that this is going to be some heavy-duty stuff, I don't know what will. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm planning to attend. And after you listen to this podcast, I bet that you will plan to attend as well. Dr. Adams, just a great guest, and I'm very excited. And so someone might be whispering into my ear, well, Mark, if you're so excited, stop talking and let's get to Professor Adams. And so I think we'll do that right now. Welcoming to What Matters in North Carolina, Dr. Mike Adams. Enjoy. It is a real pleasure to welcome to What Matters in North Carolina, Dr. Mike Adams. He is professor of criminology at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Dr. Adams, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And wanted to kind of promote a little bit in advance so our listeners can avail themselves of a great opportunity, the ICON Lecture Series, cranking up soon, and you will be speaking in May, I believe it is,
on March.
Actually. March, I'm sorry, March 7th, on how campuses, how U.S. campuses incubate and enforce cultural Marxism. And boy, that sounds like it's going to be very, very interesting. Tell us, first of all, tell us a little bit about what you do there at Wilmington in criminology, and then what we can expect in that topic.
Well, basically, I was a professor, an atheist and a leftist professor on this campus for a number of years, and then later, after I converted on both counts, my life changed significantly. Despite the asserted commitment to tolerance and diversity on our campuses, our universities are exactly the opposite, and they are very closed to conservative thought. And so later on, when my views changed, it really didn't take long for me to get involved in a free speech controversy. Fortunately, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education stood up for me, and in the process, I sort of accidentally got interjected into the national spotlight, and after that, I decided to actually take advantage of that by writing columns and giving speeches on First Amendment issues. And so basically what I'm going to try to do in the ICON Lecture Series is to talk about how, Marxism and radical thought on our college campuses only succeeds because they're really ideological echo chambers. It's not that they have good ideas, but they've set up a system on the campus where we don't have reasoned debate. And I'm actually going to be talking about some things that we can do about it, campus speech codes and things of that nature. Speech zones and microaggression training have substantially shut down the marketplace of ideas, and we actually need action to reform the university system from without.
Dr. Adams, I don't want to get too much off topic here, but I have been engaged in various interviews in the past couple of months about this whole phenomenon that's going on across campuses in the United States. And you brought up speech zones and microaggressions. And not to offend anyone, but when I first read about triggers and microaggressions, I thought it was one of the more ridiculous things that I had ever read. I read an article where someone at UNC Chapel Hill had suggested that we don't tell, for example, we don't pay a compliment to a woman if she's wearing new shoes, because by saying those are nice shoes, we're really telling her that she's pretty much a moron and worthless except for her outward display of new shoes. And I'm right. thinking to myself, who comes up with this, and why is this stuff even given any kind of serious credence? It's ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you why. You know, for a number of years, we had the problem of free speech problems on campuses coming from the administration. In other words, they would come up with speech zones, basically saying you can only speak on 1% of the campus. And then they'd regulate that 1% by trying to have a ban on offensive speech through the use of speech codes. What we've seen, though, over the course of the last few years is a change where it's no longer the case where the universities are dumping these requirements upon students and taking their rights away against their will. Now the students themselves are actually starting to demand the restrictions on free speech. There's a culture of censorship that is beginning to spread among this generation. And why is that happening? Well, they see it as a weapon, basically. They go into microaggression training, and they have college administrators who are teaching them new and novel ways of being offended at language that wasn't even meant to be offensive. They realize that they can use this as a weapon against people. They get an argument with someone, and they don't have the intelligence to provide a rebuttal. Well, what can they do? They can then whip up a charge against them in some sort of a university proceeding for violating some sort of campus speech code. But before that, they're going to be trained and taught about what is offensive speech before they learn how to prosecute someone for engaging in offensive speech. You know, it's interesting. It's teaching people how to be aggressive with others and shut them down when speech upsets them instead of actually engaging the ideas on their own merit. And you can sort of see the appeal of this. Students find this to be empowering, but what they don't realize is we've got government agents who are determining what ideas are acceptable and what are not, and that actually is dangerous, sort of turning over their rights to government supervision. I just don't think that the students have thought about the long-term ramifications of what they are allowing to fester in their culture.
Wow, that's a mouthful, and I agree with you. And yet I still am having a hard time grasping why, and maybe it's just a similar phenomenon as to everything else, because it seems like the great, quote, silent majority is always just kind of stands around and does nothing while societal change happens before its very eyes. I'm thinking in terms of, for example, the transgender phenomenon that is moving across the country. I like to say, and not to offend anyone, but, you know, all of a sudden the T got slapped on the end of LGBTQ, and out of nowhere, now the transgender movement is front and center. It's a minuscule segment of the population, and yet they are one of the loudest voices now that we hear. And the vast majority of folks, I don't think, really want, for example, in North Carolina under House Bill 2, I don't think men want their daughters in restrooms with other men, but that majority doesn't really do anything to make those objections known. And so is that what we're seeing on college campuses as well, Dr. Adams, where the vast majority of students really don't pay any attention to this kind of stuff, and so it just is allowed to grow on its own?
Well, you know, they've been indoctrinated for 20 years. I mean, think about it. The whole idea of campus speech codes and the right to be unoffended was just an idea that we didn't take very seriously. But we, after we allowed it to fester for about 20 years, we realized suddenly we've got a generation of people who have grown up believing that, believing that there is a hate speech exception to the First Amendment, even though they can't actually define what hate speech is. But if you really want to get down to the core of why this happens, you have to understand that university administrators are not in the business of solving problems. They're in the business of creating problems, because to the extent that they're able to create problems, then that creates government bureaucratic jobs for them. That is their job security. And so if you wonder, why do we have bias response teams? Why do we have diversity experts? Why do we have microaggression training? Because they have to go out there in an age where clearly women and blacks and homosexuals have far more rights and far more opportunity than they did have a few years ago. They have to find new problems out there. They say to solve, but actually they have to find new problems to sustain their livelihood. I mean, government bureaucrats don't solve problems like segregation and then say, oh, we're done, it's time for us to go into the private sector. That's not the way things work. They go find new problems. And so every couple of years, you're going to get a new concept. It'll be the trigger warning, then microaggression, then the bias response team. It's not going to stop until we stop it from the outside. And that's why we really need comprehensive free speech legislation to come in from the state legislature to deal with the problem from without. Because they may tell you that the legislature is a threat to free speech on our campuses, but that's not true. That hadn't been true for 50 years. All of the problems have been happening from within the system, and so if we're going to gain control, the solution has to come from outside the system.
Our guest, Dr. Michael Adams from UNCW, professor of criminology, and let me just be blunt. Is this just a veiled attempt to silence Christianity? And when you boil it all down...
Well, it's broader than that, I think. I think we saw a philosophy of postmodernism as a worldview enter into the academy in great force in the late 1970s, starting with the English departments. And eventually, postmodernism has sort of spread throughout the ranks of the administrations. I mean, that's kind of the dominant worldview on our campuses. And by postmodernism, I mean it's this idea that there is no objective truth, but what gets defined as truth is essentially a function of a power struggle. Well, you begin to believe that, then you see the trouble that we're in. You begin to think that rights don't belong to individuals. Instead, rights belong to groups. And so the idea is not to have a free and open marketplace of ideas, but instead to rig the marketplace of ideas in such a way that it actually empowers minorities. And so essentially, when you get into that kind of a worldview or that kind of a mindset, you're just not going to target Christians, but any group that is seen as being dominant. And that's the reason why you have all this talk about white privilege on our college campuses. So it's broader than just an attack on Christianity. It's the idea of empowering minorities and going against any traditionally dominant group. That's it, really postmodern to me. Postmodernism to me is very closely related to the Marxist worldview. But that's the dominant view on campus, and it is indeed very, very dangerous.
Well, I guess I'm going to repeat a previous comment or question. Is it really the, let's say, for example, I'll make up a number because I don't know how many students are on campus there at UNCW, but let's say it's 10,000. There's 2,000? Okay.
15,000.
So is the majority of that number holding that view, or is it just a few who have the microphone and everybody else is keeping their head down and going to class?
They don't know what their worldview is. The majority of the students don't have a clearly defined worldview. They have a cut and paste worldview. They get some of it from their parents and some of it from their professors, and so they don't have a clearly defined worldview. But they do accept certain ideas, and certain ideas are the ones that they accept are the ones that they've heard repeated the most. And examples of that would be hate speech. Well, you know, free speech is protected by the First Amendment, but not hate speech. Through sheer repetition, they have begun to dilute, basically, their views, their belief in the importance of the Constitution. But I wouldn't say that they have a clearly defined view in any sense. But that is to the advantage of the administration, isn't it? If the basic bedrock principles, foundational principles of our constitutional republic have been watered down and made ambiguous, that makes their mission much more likely to succeed.
Now, in the and I want to go back to your thought about legislation, but in the title of the speech that we're looking forward to on March 7th, part of the ICON lecture series, How U.S. Campuses Incubate and Enforce Cultural Marxism, for those of us who need a little help in understanding some of those types of expressions, what exactly would you boil down the phrase cultural Marxism to mean?
Well, you know, economic Marxism is very simple. You know, it's the idea that we have the haves and the have-nots, basically. And, you know, Marx talked about how one capitalist consumes many. And as the capitalist society, or the bourgeois class actually gets smaller and the proletariat gets bigger and bigger, and as we have increasing urbanization and increasing lines of communication to open up, eventually the balance of power is going to be tipped, essentially. That's economic Marxism. But cultural Marxism, I'm essentially referring to identity politics and this idea that we are going to radically transform the culture by trying to get different minority groups to think that they have a vested interest in defeating something such as white privilege, basically. And so, you know, these battles that we see where all of a sudden the transgendered become the next group that has to be represented on our campus. You notice that feminist and the African American Center and El Centro Hispano, all of these folks are rallying together behind them in the cause. You see, that has nothing to do with economics. That is, in fact, cultural. But the idea of getting different victim groups or different marginalized groups to sort of band together and transform the culture, that's what I mean by identity politics. Mm-hmm. And also by cultural Marxism. They're really one and the same. And cultural Marxism really is at the root of political correctness. Again, it goes back to this idea that we don't adhere to principles, but we have rights that belong to groups, with a special emphasis on victim groups gaining power.
One thing wanted to ask that I think would be relevant in terms of a Marxist philosophy. What intrigues me is that we see the press so often trumpeting and just basically having a love affair with liberal ideology and leftist thought and basically running roughshod over anything that smacks of conservatism. And yet, if you extrapolate Dr. Adams all the way out to its natural end or ultimate conclusion, liberalism goes the way of Marxism, which goes the way of communism, which goes the way of no free speech. And so those that are enjoying freedom of speech and freedom of the press are actually, if left to their own ends, would find themselves without that freedom ultimately. Does that make sense?
Right. Right. And by the way, I would actually caution against using the word liberal now. I mean, we had a period of time on our college campuses where we had a problem with liberal bias. And we really thought that that was a problem. You know, there was an absence of Christian professors on campus, an absence of conservative professors on campus for a number of years. And everyone thought that's awful. Well, you know what? They were saying that back when we had true liberals on campus, who were basically FDR liberals and Kennedy liberals. The people that have replaced them are not liberal at all. They are illiberal leftist. And it's important for us to understand that that's a very different thing, because these are the people who don't care about principles of free speech and don't really believe in tolerance. So they've actually been replaced. I mean, the old school liberals actually believed in free speech, but we are dealing with something far worse than bias. The problem now is not bias on our college campuses, but an effort to systematically undermine the Constitution.
Well, I'm intrigued by your thought that there might need to be some type of legislative interaction here. You know, this show and myself kind of take a conservative lean, and so getting the government involved often is kind of tricky. But in this area, I'm intrigued what your thoughts are.
Well, actually, you're reining the government in when you pass this kind of legislation, because we have government agents right now who are coming along and prosecuting people under unconstitutional speech codes. Let's say that you have a campus system, like the UNC system, where you have 17 different campuses, and let's say that 15 of the campuses have one or more unconstitutional speech codes, which allow the government to do things to people that they're not constitutionally permitted to do. It makes sense to pass one piece of legislation if it gets rid of a dozen or potentially dozens of illegal statutes on the campus. So there's actually a net gain for liberty involved in restricting campus administrators with state-level legislation.
And your gut in terms of this General Assembly open to that sort of idea?
Yes, yes. And I expect to see movement on this front very soon. There's been a very interesting white paper that actually has been written by Stanley Kurtz in conjunction with the Goldwater Institute in Phoenix, Arizona. And so I would like to see some variation of that introduced in the legislature soon and ultimately either signed by the governor or I think that if he rejected something like that, it would be the kind of thing where a veto override would be doable. So I hope to see something happen real soon.
Wow. Well, we will look forward to that. And we will certainly, Dr. Mike Adams, look forward to March 7th, the ICON Lecture Series, where our listeners and others will be able to gather and hear more of your thoughts on how U.S. campuses are incubating and enforcing cultural Marxism. This was a first having you on the show. I sincerely hope it will not be the last. You're an excellent guest, and Dr. Adams, thank you for joining
us
here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Bye-bye.
Well, I told you, I absolutely told you, this is a smart guy, Dr. Mike Adams. We appreciate him being on What Matters in North Carolina. And as I said at the outset, I really believe he has his finger on the pulse of what's going on when it comes to campus speech rights and what's happening on college and university campuses all across the country. I found that interesting because, you know, I really do not believe that, you know, a campus that has 2,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 or 50,000, that the majority of the students are involved in this cultural change, this attempt to regulate and, you know, keep only the types of speech that they feel appropriate, you know, ongoing on the campuses and trying to limit other, you know, free speech like Christian speech or conservative speech. I really don't think the vast majority of kids, I think they're keeping their heads down. Like I told Dr. Adams, I think they're going to class, they're going to games, they're having fun, they're being college students. But as always, it's just a small number that has the loudest voice. We see it all the time in the broader spectrum of society, and the vast majority just allows this stuff to happen, and it is something that is really amazing and hard to understand. But we appreciate Dr. Mike Adams being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina. We appreciate you listening, and we're doing our very best to bring you the best content of any show anywhere in North Carolina when it comes to state government, state politics, state policy. We're getting it done right here for you on What Matters in North Carolina. As a reminder, you can like our Facebook page. We'd appreciate it if you would do that. We're at facebook.com/whatmattersnc. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at whatmattersnc. And you can find me at Mark Shiver. And a lot going on in the state. Governor Cooper has made some type of press conference where he has said that well, we're offering a compromise, and there's a list of members willing to support his proposal. Senator Berger's office immediately fired back that we're not aware of this, and if there are any members that are willing to support his proposal, then he should make it public now. And Berger's statement said that Cooper's proposal does nothing to address the basic privacy concerns of women and young girls who do not feel comfortable using the bathroom, undressing, and showering in the presence of men, as we saw in Charlotte last year. And, you know, I didn't mean to get on this today, but as I was coming to work yesterday, I was flipping through the radio dial there and landed on a local sports talk show that comes on in the morning. And these guys are very liberal. They'd recently had Governor Cooper on their show. I heard a show where they had, at that time, candidate Stein for Attorney General, Josh Stein, on their show. So they're very liberal, very left-leaning, but they were making light somewhat of the issue of little girls, you know, and daughters. I think I don't remember the exact quote, but it's something about, you know, do you have a daughter or something like that. And I don't think people really care. People on the left, I just think they're so willing to sweep under the rug this whole issue of safety for women and girls. Doesn't that boggle the mind? Wait, these are the folks, the Democrats, the left, the liberals, they're the ones that are supposed to care so much about our kids. They're screaming about funding for K-12 education. They're accusing the Republicans of destroying public education in North Carolina. They're accusing Republicans of not paying teachers anything. All the teachers are leaving, and oh, the children are suffering, and they don't give a you know what about the children. When the Charlotte Observer says young girls are just going to have to learn to get over their discomfort with looking at male genitalia, what does that tell you? That should tell you everything you need to know about the mindset of the left in this state. And folks, I'm telling you, as Dr. Adams so eloquently pointed out, this is not just a skirmish. This is an all-out war. And kids are at stake. And by golly, it's time that people on the right woke up and said, no, we're not putting up with this. Enough. There you go. That's the end of show rant, courtesy of me. Thanks so much for listening. We do appreciate it. And take a stand. Keep our wives and daughters and children safe. It's very important. Until next time, thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.